everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lead Publishing's podcast, Lead Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is the author of Spike, Rene Cario. How are you today, Rene?
I'm great, actually. It's sunny. London's looking great. It's feeling good.
Great, and it's great to have you here in the studio. And for those who are listening, Rene is one of the world's leading business gurus specializing in leadership, culture, and transformation. He is drawing from his own unique experiences on the board of the biggest international organizations, from Marks & Spencer and Pepsi to IPC Media and Inland Revenue. He is also the best-selling author of the Leadership and Culture Bible, Corporate Voodoo. So he has joined us today to talk about his new book, Spike, a bit about the ideas of the book and himself. So my first question for anyone joining us on the podcast, Rene, is what inspired you to become an author?
Well, that's a great question, actually, because I spend a lot of my time standing on a stage, speaking to the senior team, senior executives in organizations, and telling stories. I'm not the consultant that sits there and does case studies of abstract theory concept. I'm telling stories of real events where the rubber hits the road. And for most of those events, I do a lot of writing afterwards. The book was a natural extension of what I was doing. And I suppose every 3 or 4 years, you get the big idea. And I've had this big idea for 3 to 4 years. And it was time to put it to paper.
It's that time. And what really stood out for me about the book is the title itself, Spike. And there's something that's not really a title. You keep referring back to it. It is a concept. And can you tell us a bit about what the idea of Spike is?
So far too many years ago, I was on the board of PepsiCo, and the chief executive used to wander in every morning and say, ask the question, what's your spike? All the Americans seemed to know what it meant, but I was the only Brit, and I wasn't quite sure what it was. And when I asked him, he said, it's the answer to the question, what are you great at? Not what you're good at, what are you great at? He felt his job as the boss, as the chief executive, was to identify the spike of all of his team. And his role was to find out what they're great at and then identify opportunities for them to practice and enable their strengths every day. Very simple concept. His view was that everyone had a standout strength, a spike. If you came in every day and you utilized your spikes, you'd had a good day. If everyone has a good day, the business has a good day. It's that simple. It's that compelling.
And actually, in the book, you talk a lot about our hidden strength and energies. What do you think is the biggest obstacle for us to overcome in terms of finding them?
Western developed societies have become fixated on the things we're not so good at. Johnny goes to school for the first time at 4 years old. The excited parents turn up for the first time for the parent teacher's evening. And the teacher says, Johnny's not so good at spelling. We're going to give him 4 extra spelling classes. I wonder how different the world would be if they said, Johnny's fantastic at arithmetic. We're going to give him 4 extra arithmetic classes. From the moment we're born, everyone's looking out for what we're not so good at, and they want us to fix it. If we go back to the 1980s, in organizations in business, we called them weaknesses. In the 90s, they were areas for improvement. In the noughties, they were areas for development. Today, we call them limitations. But the fixation is on your limitations. Millions of people go to work every year and they have their annual appraisal. At the appraisal, it always goes something like this. Rene, we've found 2 or 3 things you're outstanding at, real strengths. Can we just park those? Can we focus on the 124 things you're not so good at? And at the end of that meeting, trawling over all the things you're not so good at and ignoring all your strengths, then your line manager will say, here's a performance improvement plan or here's a performance development plan that's going to focus on your limitations. What if that performance development plan was focused on your strengths? What if the whole conversation was more about your strengths as opposed to the things you're not so good at? I think we fundamentally change our world.
Yeah. And
for the better.
It's actually also really interesting because surely if we focus on people's strengths, then that will in turn motivate them and inspire them to then find their own weaknesses themselves and try to better themselves, surely.
Well, it's interesting because I'm not sure a load of time spent trying to move your weaknesses up a micrometer or to a percentage point or two is
right.
That valuable.
Right.
I think at best you get it to mediocrity. I wonder if your time is better spent honing and fine-tuning your strengths. What I say in the book, the Spike philosophy is, instead of spending a load of time working on the things you're not so good at, find someone with complementary skills, complementary spikes, someone who's good at the things you're not so good at. So I think spike is very interesting, and it's enabling and motivational for the individual. It's fabulous for the team. Sports teams have been doing this forever. Everyone in a netball team, or a basketball team, in a football team, each position plays to the spikes of the individual. It's about time that business and academia took the same lessons. No, I've had the privilege to work with some of the best leaders in the world. I've yet to meet an all-rounder. I've yet to meet one that's flawless. At the very, very best, they know the two or three things they're outstanding at, spikes, but they have the humility to embrace the things they're not so good at. And what they do is they choose teams around them who balance out the things they're not so good at. The dream team is we come in every day, every one of us are doing the things we're brilliant at, because the virtual spike circle is the things I tend to enjoy are the things I tend to be really good at. The things I tend to be really good at are the things I tend to enjoy. The perfect day is come in every day, be who you are, no one else, do the things you love, nothing else, and you're brilliant at them. Everybody wins. There need not be losers anymore if we've got the humility to say, you know what, here are three, four things I'm not so good at, but here are one or two things I'm outstanding at.
And you raise a very good point there. And before we move on to the next question, actually, I have a bit of a offbeat question for you.
Please.
Why do you think we focus so much on, you know, weaknesses and negatives? Because I've personally found that, you know, society is sometimes a bit too eager to tell us how flawed we are, and then sometimes even sell us the solution, ironically, which is a very interesting concept. But it seems to be that, you know, weaknesses tend to be, like you say, there's this sort of barricade that really traps people. Is there one particular reason why we focus on this so much instead of trying to find our spikes and move on?
So this is where I started the book. And it's a great question, a very insightful question, Mira, because I think it came from good in all of us wanting our children, our pupils, our workers to be perfect. The tendency was to find what they're not so good at and try and fix it. We've become so obsessed with trying to fix it, we've somehow forgotten that every individual has strengths. And if you see mothers at home, which is the model of leaders that I think are relevant and fantastic for today, they instantly know the strengths of each of their children. They instantly know. And they play them to their strengths. Something happens from the first day they go to school. There's an incredible focus on fixing what you're not so good at. And I think it manifests itself in very negative ways. So when someone walks into the room, we're still swayed by our first impression, which is coloured by our implicit bias. And there's an unconscious bias there. If we see a disabled person, what's the first thing we think?
Try and help them.
That's what, in the best world, that's what we do.
Yeah.
If we see a woman, what subliminal messages does that give us? If we see someone of a different race, of a different religion, I wonder what Spike says is take a second impression. Just pause. Take a second impression. Get rid of the implicit bias. Now search for their strengths. Search for their spikes. If we look for everybody's spikes and we dismiss whatever limitations they may have, we fundamentally change our world for the better. We change academia, we change families, we change business, we change organizations, we change life, we change society. I would ask the question, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back into something that personally I feel very strongly about, and that is the equality of opportunity and giving everyone the same level playing ground and saying...
You've just nailed it.
If you're good at something, there should be no one trying to stop you, because in a way, you're not also hindering them, you're hindering yourself.
We gave a talk. I went down to Lillian Bayliss Technology School in Streatham, down in South London. And the fabulous head teacher, Gary, who had taken a school 7 years ago, it was in Ofsted Special Measures. Today, it's outstanding. He asked me to give a talk to his 15 and 16-year-olds. And he said, academically, they're outstanding, but they seem to lack confidence and self-esteem. So I had a 15-minute chat with them about Spike in the gymnasium they've got, and something amazing happened. Everyone left the room just a little bit taller. As I was explaining to them, that every single one of them had at least one standout spike. It's an enormous strength. And then a young girl wearing a hijab, clutching her rucksack in front of her to nearly hide behind, she came up to me, she said, I know what my spikes are. I said, what are they? Geography and history. And she said, but I also know what my limitation is. I said, what's that? She said, confidence. She said, can you teach me confidence? Can you give me the spike of confidence? And I was trying to explain to her that history and geography are learnt skills, not an inherent spike.
They're not an applied skill. Yes.
She was a bit confused. We spoke for about 10 minutes. Then she walked off. When she came back to me, no rucksack in front of her, a big cheerful smile and nearly a grin, she said to me, I'm working on my confidence. I'm going to make it a spike, and walked off. When I spoke to the head teacher, we both realised that in all of our lives, there's a time when we don't quite believe in ourselves. And if someone takes a moment to come and believe in you and catches you doing things right and can find something that you're really great at and help you to be better at it, it gives you incredible self-esteem and confidence. That's the philosophy of Spike.
Right.
The power of recognition and the power of knowing that there is something I'm brilliant at, as opposed to the depression that leads from, I've got all these things I'm hopeless at.
Yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy as well, I believe, that if you know, you are what you think you are at the end of the day, so if you...
You are my advocate, my
exactly.
friend.
Exactly.
But that's it. It's yeah. nothing more than that. It's,
I agree.
Don't be cynical about yourself anymore. Yeah. Stop trying to fix things that you're never going to be brilliant at.
Yeah.
Focus on the things you're going to be superb at. Can you just imagine if we all went into work every day doing something we're outstanding at and something we loved? You'd never look at look at the watch.
Yeah, and it's interesting, just today on the way to the studio, actually, in the newspaper, there was a 1 in 3 Londoners apparently hate their job. So it is an issue, and I think the first step is just realizing and being self-aware and just seeing what's in front of you and how you can improve.
So Mira, this is a great question here now, because the biggest question I get asked is, well, how do I discover what my spikes are?
Yeah.
And my very simple advice is, go and ask a loved one. Someone who has unconditional love for you. Mother, father, sister, brother, uncle, aunt, nephew, niece, partner, wife, son, daughter. They're not going to use management speak or business language.
No.
But they will give, because they love you and they care about you, they'll be very positive about what your strengths are. And I've heard loads of them. We've got videos on our website of people sharing their spikes. And they range from, you've got eyes in the back of your head. You're firm, but you're fair. You're generous. You're always there for me. You say it as it is. No matter how tough things are going, you're always there for me. You're always optimistic. Listen to those. The more of those you listen to, the more you start to work out the inherent strength you have. It's not the applied skill. It's not the learned skill. It's the inherent strength. I'm great with people. I'm a good communicator. I can solve problems. I'm patient. Now, if we can find professional roles that play to those strengths, and every member of our team is playing to a strength, and they're all complementary, wow. This is the high-performing team.
It's where the magic happens,
yes.
Yeah.
That's what football teams do. That's what cricket teams do.
Yeah.
Why don't business teams do the same?
Yeah.
Why don't we start at a school where we look for heroes and heroines who are great at stuff, as opposed to making everyone feel bad and doing the times table, which you're useless at? Everyone's got a gift. Everyone's got a blessing. Everyone has a spike.
Now, in chapter 9 of the book, mm-hmm. you actually talk about not letting your strength in turn become weaknesses, which is a very interesting concept. There is something that is often overlooked by people, and it does tend to reverse in a way. How can this happen, and why does it happen?
Let's take a very contemporary example. Theresa May was the Home Secretary who was seen as strong and stable. She was seen as she could stick to her guns. Under pressure, she'd be forthright, she'd be She just stick to her guns, indefatigable all the time. The downside to that is that she likes to be in control. She wants to manage every situation. Fine. I wonder if she had people around her who were the opposites. People who weren't afraid to challenge her. People who weren't afraid to give her advice. People who weren't afraid to bring in the opposite spike, some warmth, some emotional intelligence, more team play. I think she surrounded herself with too many like-minded people. Consequently, there were no discussions. There was no challenge. Alignment and agreement on everything. And if we look at the disastrous performance at the election, the disastrous performance at the Grenfell, where were the complimentary spikes around her? Where were those advising her to get off the script, be a bit more human, engaged? I think every time I find someone with a standout strength, I hope they have the humility to recognise the things they're not so good at and have people around them who compensate for their massive strengths. And there's nothing worse than when someone's got such a standout strength. Donald Trump. What he needs is someone next to him who's the identikit opposite.
And someone who can take away his Twitter from him occasionally.
Someone who can take a lot more than Twitter away from him. It was interesting when Barack Obama was appointed president. The vice president of the United States is usually a great foil for the president.
Right.
Joe Biden was a fantastic appointment. Nearly 40 years experience of Washington machinery where Obama had none. Someone who operates behind the curtains where Obama's so good on his feet. Someone who understands policy in a way that the virgin president, there's no way he could have been. Whenever you saw them together, there was something comfortable. And it was nearly Batman and Robin.
Yes.
And the beauty of Batman and Robin is that Robin never wants to be Batman. They're just there because they're complementary. And the way our strength, a spike, can become a weakness is when it's overbearing, it's used too often, it's the only gig in town, and there's no compensatory factor. And we see this in some of our leaders, who they're brilliant, but they do go on a little too far and there's no restraining method. And to me, it's not about spending time working on your weaknesses. Be brave enough and have the humility to say, here are the two or three things I'm not so good at. Why don't I surround myself with people who compensate for that?
And actually that is a very fascinating concept, because it leads to me personally to the idea of diversity of thought. Because we often talk about diversity when it comes to different cultures and how we can accept other people's strengths and what they may know that we do not know in terms of insight when it comes to the business sense of a different market perhaps or a new audience. But I think something that's actually often overlooked, just as you say, is this diversity of thought, having someone say something different which you may have missed out. And it's a very, I guess, you can be very defensive about it when someone challenges you that way.
But look, you're onto something here. We write about this in the book. I write about this in the book a lot. I spend a lot of my time in the boardrooms of the UK, Europe, America and Africa. There still is the tendency for the person chosen to be the boss is still, I choose my words carefully, the cleverest man in the room.
Right.
And the cleverest man in the room is most comfortable surrounded by more clever men in the room. And the tendency to hire in our image,
yes,
is something that you can understand why it makes us comfortable. We can understand how it makes the team narrow. I wonder today where the most successful teams, in my experience, are those where the leader is smart enough to know what they need around them is people who are not like them. And we look at the rather obvious blunt instruments of diversity, race, gender, disability, religion, etc. They're still important. But there's a much more important dimension taking place. And I think that's diversity of experience, diversity of exposure, diversity of background. The more of us who come from different, completely different backgrounds will look at the same problem in many different ways. The smart leader then becomes the conductor of an orchestra of diverse thought, diverse judgment, diverse experience. The last thing we need in today's volatile markets is groupthink, group decision-making that takes us to the precipice of where many governments are today, where no longer in touch with people who are different to them, think differently, behave differently, can no longer walk in the shoes of electorate because they themselves have separated themselves into a bubble somewhere where they no longer connect. The solution is Spike.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. And leading on, the one thing that we haven't talked about is failure. Mm-hmm. And that's a very powerful thing because it seems to be an ongoing problem when it comes to people's development. And not so much the failure itself, but the fear of failure and trying to avoid it at all costs. Is failure all that bad?
It's interesting because I think failure's very different in different territories. So I can't think of one successful entrepreneur in America that hasn't tasted failure, talked about their failure, and risen to the top because of their failure. And I remember at Pepsi, the watchword was, the only mistake is the one you don't learn from. But if you're not prepared to make the mistake, you will not grow. And we need bosses, teachers, organizations fixated on our ability to learn and grow, not our ability to never make a mistake. We see far too many organizational cultures driven by fear of failure as opposed to desire for success. There's the great story that the leader takes his team into the jungle. It's four horrible, sweaty, nasty, malaria-filled days. They can't wait to get to the other end. They're hacking through the undergrowth. On the fourth day, the leader climbs the highest tree, looks around and says, guys, sorry, wrong jungle. Now, they actually trust their leader even more for being honest with them that they've made a mistake. If your leader never owns up to making a mistake, then he or she starts to create the climate of fear. If the leader's prepared to share their vulnerability, the things I'm good at, my spikes, and the things I'm not so good at, and when I make a mistake, I'm prepared to share that with you, you will try harder without fear. We need to live in an environment where we're more risk tolerant and we're more risk ready. There is no risk-free approach to success. So therefore, every time we fall over, let's have an environment where people help us learn from it, but don't make us suffer from it. Enable us to grow. Imagine if our children grow up in a world where they can't fail. Then they will never learn, they will never grow.
Yeah, agreed. And this leads into my question about weaknesses. I want to kind of go back to weakness because that seems to be, I mean, personally, it fascinates me a lot. Not for the wrong reasons, of course. Mm. But you say that we should learn to tolerate them while capitalizing on spikes.
Yes.
And we talked about this. But at the same time, how can we embrace our weakness? You know, you said we should not try to aspire to mediocrity and we should not try to be something we are not. But at the same time, by being self-aware of ourselves, we are aware of our weaknesses. Can we perhaps turn them into positives or something we can feed on?
Well, let's be pragmatic here. I've had 30, 35 appraisals in my career. And I'm old enough, ugly enough, mature enough to be able to talk about them openly now, which I couldn't at a stage. And no matter where I've worked, at Marks & Spencer's, when I was at Pepsi, when I was at IPC, my appraisal, there was only ever three strengths. And they've been consistent all the way through. I could do the big picture. I could communicate a bit. And I was by far the most passionate and enthusiastic on the team. They were my spikes. Loads of things I'm not so good at. I spent 10 years at Marks & Spencer's absolutely fixated and focused on the things I'm not so good at. When I walked through the door at Pepsi, they turned my world upside down. They wanted to know the things I was brilliant at, and they built that job around me. My 10 years at Marks & Spencer's, brilliant company, loved all the 10 years, but I remember coming in at 7:30 every morning, leaving my personality at reception, going up to my desk and being the person they wanted me to be. At 6:30, I'd pick up my personality from reception and go home. I remember in my performance appraisals at Marks & Spencer, they would say, he can be a little emotional. The exact same behavior at Pepsi was, he's very passionate.
Right.
At Pepsi, I came in at 7:30 and brought all of me to work. I only did the things I was brilliant at. I'd chosen a team around me who compensated for all the things I was rubbish at. I was rubbish at spreadsheets. I've got a couple of guys who are brilliant at it. I'm far too impatient. I've got people around me who are far more patient. I'm instinctive. I'm risk embracing. I want to go for it immediately. I need to have a couple of people around me who challenge me, who have alternative points of view. For Spike to really work, never be so far away from the dissenting voices. They're essential to your success.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. And I think it's very easy to surround ourselves with an echo chamber of stuff that we like to hear. And this is a very interesting phenomenon, especially in today when it comes to not only work, but life, culture, politics, everything. It's very easy to surround yourself with what you like.
How many people agree with Theresa May the election was a good idea?
Yeah, no, I absolutely.
There wasn't anyone saying, hang on a minute, we've got a majority here. We're risking everything here. And frankly, Theresa, you're not the most charismatic leader in the world. I wouldn't risk it.
Yeah.
There wasn't anyone saying that. And I look at Donald Trump and his excesses. Who's saying to him, Donald, maybe that's slightly inappropriate?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
We all need the dissenting voices. But as I said before, the tendency is to surround yourself with like-minded people. No. Spike says, consider diversity and inclusion. If you practice Spike, you need never say the word diversity again, because it's at the heart of everything it does. Mm. It's not about all of us being identical. It's the opposite. Difference counts.
Yeah, absolutely. And my last question is the one I ask all the guests on a podcast, and that, what are you currently reading?
Do you know, I've been travelling to Africa recently. On Saturday, I'm going off to Accra, Ghana. Then I'm going on to Abidjan in Ivory Coast. Last week I was in South Africa. So I've rediscovered some of my African roots, and I've been reading Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's Americana. I read Half a Yellow Sun, which was her first book a couple of months ago. Absolutely brilliant storytelling. And I'm reading Americana, which is a journey of a Nigerian woman to America, and her story of, whilst mixing in the African-American community, realising that blacks around the world are very different. But I think that at the heart of it is part of the reason for writing Spike. Spike is a collection of stories. I didn't want to write a management book. It's not to-do lists. It's not impenetrable psychometrics. It's a bunch of stories that you will find yourself in. It's what we call leadership. Leadership for me is vision, people, teams, culture. And what I've tried to do is write a book which is going to provoke you to think about things differently. I'm not giving you solutions, because every one of us is different. What I'm saying to you is, wouldn't it be wonderful if we saw something positive in every single human being? And wouldn't it be wonderful if we built our teams on people who are really different to us? And wouldn't it be wonderful if we lived in a world where no one, absolutely no one, felt that they were a loser anymore? And I'm not sure anyone can argue with that.
Yes, I've absolutely agreed on that point. And with that, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today, Rene.
Mira, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
And for those listening, of course, if you'd like to find out more about Spike and Rene, you can check all the links in the description below, where you can find out where you can read more about the book, where you can purchase the book. You can catch up with Rene's latest work, his speaking and other related projects. We would like to thank you very much for joining us today on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio, and we look forward to seeing you next time.